Today's message: love, trust, and obey the Lord. And that's a recipe for safety, protection, and life. The Lord has given us the recipe, and we, in order to make it, must follow and do exactly as he says. And then he has given us examples in the Word to show us how we do this, what we should be feeling. And he guarantees, if we do it that way, he guarantees success. As expressed in the Psalm number 5, verses 1 through 12. It's a psalm of David and a prayer for deliverance and guidance. We know that David had his problems, and he needed that protection, that strength, that encouragement, and that assurance from the Lord that in spite of whatever happened, the Lord was there with him and was giving him everything that he needed. When someone knows the Lord and accepts what the Lord stands for, it becomes easy to love the Lord because he gives us so much. He blesses us so much. And he encourages us so much. We have no choice but to love him and do all we can to obey. So we desire with all our hearts to do the things that he requires of us. And David knew him well. David had a lot of interaction with the Lord. And it meant so much to him. Whenever something was wrong, he stopped. And he turned to the Lord and he asked him for that strength, that encouragement. David knew him well. He praised and honored him all his life. Even at times when he made mistakes, he still stuck to it, turned around, and did the right thing. So I said verses 1 through 12, Psalm number 5. In verse 1, he says, give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. And this is so much. He's saying so much by those few words. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. David is not only praying to the Lord, he's also meditating as he prays. He's asking the Lord to listen to him, listen to his pleas. Lord, let them be seriously taken, seriously handled, seriously blessed. He's asking all this. And he wants him to consider them worthy to be granted. In verse 2, he says, hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King and my God, for unto you will I pray. So he's still meditating. He's still meditating. And he's crying out for help. He's also making it clear that this cry for help is being made to his King and his God. He's making that very clear. I know who you are. I worship you as that. And I am putting it all before you and expecting the return from you that you usually give. He's saying, unto thee will I pray, because he knows that only God can give the desired help that he's asking for. And you can only pray to God. Who else can you pray to? Verse 3 says, my voice shall you hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto you, and I will look up. when he looks up, there's no question of who he's talking to or who he's appealing to, who he is begging for that help and that encouragement. I will look up. Our ministers and spiritual teachers always tell us that the morning is the best time to pray. You get up from bed and your mind, I guess, is clear to a certain point. You've had your rest, and that's the time. It's the beginning of the day. So we're making our plans at that time, how to spend our day and how we hope to achieve the things that we're looking toward for that day and the tasks we need to accomplish. So nothing has changed from David's time to now. It's the same. It's the same. We still have the same problems, and we still make the same pleas. And we are looking to who for it? To God, because only God can give it to us. We ask for deliverance in case of problems. And we know they could come at any time. So we have to be prepared. In verse 4, he says, "For you are not a God that has pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with you." No matter what we do, or how wicked we might be, we know that when the Lord turns to us, he's not turning to us just to punish us. He's turning to us to help us, to pick us up, to make us better. But at the same time, we realize that the Lord says, "I will not let sin go unpunished." So he deals with us on that level, but not to crush us, not to punish us, not to make us suffer, but to make us understand. He has given us a way to live. He has given us that recipe, as I called it, and we must stick to it and do the right thing. And then we shall live. And God cannot lie. God, whatever God tells us, we know that is what we shall have. That's the way it will be. God cannot lie. Not will not, but cannot lie. We know God hates wickedness. We know he's against all evil. This tells us he is a perfect, loving, and faithful God. We have no need to fear evil from the Lord, because the Lord does not introduce evil to us. Correction, yes, but not evil. The Lord doesn't say, "Well, you did this, you know, last week, and you know you should not have done it. I'm going to fix you for that." No, he doesn't work that way. He corrects us, and he pushes us forward. He pushes us up, always up. He's a perfect, loving, and faithful God. But he's also just. So if we practice evil, the wages of sin will follow us. And then we will have to turn to him again. So the Lord is also very forgiving. He's also very forgiving. Verse 5 says, "The foolish shall not stand in thy sight. You hate all workers of iniquity." So we are told in this verse that foolishness is iniquity. We must not be fools. We must not act foolishly. And when we do, knowing that the Lord has told us to do something else or to do things in a different way, and we do it in that silly way, in that wrong way, that's foolish. And foolishness is iniquity. And iniquity is sin. So it's a chain. We have to do it the right way. With a just God, the sin of foolishness will not be tolerated. The emphasis is on justice. And justice stands for truth. Truth. God is true, always true. So whoever loves the Lord and his way must stand for justice and truth. Verse 6 says, you shall destroy them that speak leasing. The Lord will abhor the bloody and deceitful man. And in this verse, the liar is put on the same level as the bloody man. The Lord hates lies. He hates lies, and he wants us to be true at all times. Liars are not to be tolerated, and they will not be tolerated in the kingdom. They will not be tolerated in the kingdom. The sin is not, it's not a simple, easy, minor sin. It's very, very important, because truth tells us what will happen. Not look out for one thing and then something else comes. Then what you said before wasn't true, was it? It must be truth. God hates lies. Verse 7 says, but as for me, I will come into thy house in the multitude of thy mercy, and in thy fear will I worship toward your holy temple. I will come into your house in the multitude of your mercy. He's telling us that God's mercy is tremendous. It's great. It's a multitude of mercy that the Lord shows to us. And I will worship toward thy holy temple. The attitude we should reflect to our God is being shown to us in this verse. David is saying to God, I know you show excessive mercy, much more than we deserve. And in holy fear, I will worship you. Now there's terrified fear, and then there's holy fear. So God wants a holy fear, not a terrified fear. He doesn't want us to be terrified of him, thinking that what we do will only be done because if we don't do it, the Lord will crush us. That's not what he wants. He wants us to be fearful of him in the sense that we know he's holy. We hold him as holy, and we will do what he does because we believe him and we want to do the right thing. Verse 8 says, lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of my enemies. Make your way straight before my face. Lead me in your righteousness. Because of my enemies, make your way straight before my face. And here David is asking for guidance to walk the straight road. He cannot afford to set a bad example. His enemies are waiting and watching to ridicule and drag him down. So he's asking for God's straight path before him, that he might walk in safety. Verse 9 says, for there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is extremely wicked. Their throat is an open sepulchre. They flatter with their tongue. And he's talking about his enemies here, who just wants to see him buried, wants to see him out of the way. And he is asking the Lord, don't let this happen. Keep me from all this. And again, we come to the lies. No faithfulness means no trust. And David says that trust comes from the mouth. So if what comes from the mouth are lies, there is no trust. The inward part David is talking about is not the liver or the kidney. He's talking about the heart, the mind, the spiritual part of a person that really strengthens him and makes him into something special. He said that their throat is an open sepulchre. What do we find in a sepulchre? We find rottenness, dead men's bones. That's how rotten the evil thoughts of his enemies are to him. Verse 10 says, destroy them, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against thee. David wants his enemies to be destroyed, because they are not only evil, but they're also tearing him down. And he wants to be free of that. He wants to put all of his sins behind him. They know that something has been wrong in his life, and they're trying to make it even harder. They're not trying to help him up or to make him better, but to make him worse. So he's asking the Lord to just remove them. Just remove them. They live as they please. They're not following the way of God. And they will reap what they sow. So God gives us all free moral agency to choose a way of life. The rest is up to us. Verse 11 says, but let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy because you defend them. And let them also that love your name be joyful in thee. David knows that those who put their trust in the Lord will rejoice and shout for joy. He is claiming the prize. He knows the Lord is just. So he's looking forward to that time, to spend that time with his loving God. Verse 12, the last verse says, for you, Lord, will bless the righteous, and with favor you will protect him as a shield. And the righteous doesn't mean the sinless. It means those who love the Lord and try to do what the Lord tells us to do. So we strive to be obedient. And when we are, we receive the favor, the protection, and the shielding from our God, as mentioned in verse 12.